I'm joined now by the Vice President of the Garda Representative Association, Brendan O'Connor. Good morning to you, Brendan, and thank you for joining us on the programme this morning. You have significant concerns, we're told, about early retirement within an Garda Síochána and the implications that might have for, is it community policing alone?
We're not focusing particularly on early retirement, but just looking on people who are leaving retirement and also resignations, which seems to be becoming a phenomenon that wasn't as prevalent in the past. So the figures released recently would show that actually the numbers of guards has fallen in the last 12 months. So certainly our members, particularly in frontline units and then in experienced specialist units, are certainly feeling that loss. So we're just saying that, you know, across the public service, when people leave one section to go to another, there's an exit interview, and we would just like maybe to look at and talk to people and see, is there something to be done to ask people to stay on or to make them feel that they want to stay longer in the organisation.
Now, you have 12,000 rank and file members out of a total workforce of 14,000 or thereabouts. You've described this decline as alarming. Why has there been, in particular in the last 2 years, in your view, have there been so many Gardaí going for early retirement, or I suppose a decline in Garda numbers?
Well, look, we'd only be getting into summation there and guessing, and that's why we want maybe it's something to ask and talk to those members and see why did they leave. But certainly COVID has an impact on recruitment, so I suppose that would be what's happening is, because these members are leaving, is that it's having a disproportionate effect because recruitment isn't keeping a pace with what it should be, and there's been a lot of specialisation in the organisation, which we do welcome, and we like to see career advancement, and we like to see a better service in relation to some areas provided to the public. But the front line is where our concern is, and we're getting a lot of feedback from members on the front line. So we just want to see, why is it that people who have another few years to go could stay on in the organisation? Now, the other thing is, we absolutely acknowledge and we want people to move on, and it's under time and it's totally their entitlement. But, you know, if there is a shortage of guards in the front line, maybe there should be a focus, maybe in relation to also maybe we're offering the type of work people are doing. Maybe they're finding it hard to cope with the shift patterns, and maybe there could be a different shift pattern available for people that when they're post senior service. So I just want to explore the issue.
But are there not more administrative staff being recruited? I know numbers are down by about 500 from what they should be, but is the fact that more administrative staff are being recruited? You're quoted as saying that Garda stations are bursting at the seams with administrative staff. If that was the case, surely that releases more Garda onto the front line, and would that make up the gap?
Well, you see, there has been some people redeployed in the last couple of years, and we do acknowledge that, and that is an organisational move. But what we would say is the administrative burden is so large that it's actually taking these extra staff to carry out those functions. And we believe that the focus should be on streamlining processes and simplifying them, not bringing in more administrative staff and not addressing those issues, because we think that the organisation is so focused on administration, we believe, to the detriment of frontline policing and service provision to the public. And we believe that whatever budget, and there is a significant budget in Garda Síochána provided for the government, and we believe the focus should certainly remain while administration is important, that there seems to be a shift in balance away from operation policing towards satisfying oversight bodies by over-duplication of processes and double-checking and triple-checking and ticking boxes on computers, basically. And seriously, it's a phenomenon across a lot of large bureaucratic organisations. We believe that just there's too much slippage there, and we're moving towards administration seems to take the lion's share or disproportionate share of what should be going
forward. Are you not reassured by the fact that the government... at least there was something emanating from somewhere that they intend to... I think there's a moratorium on recruitment at the moment in regards to the Garda College in Templemore being closed. I'm not so sure about that. But has the department not indicated that they're going to conduct a significant... talking about up to, 400, 800 new Gardaí in the coming year?
Yes, well, that's very welcome, and we want to, but again, sometimes, you know, the announcement of Garda recruitment, and we use the terminology around it, is fairly expedient to refer to extra Garda. The plan is to recruit 800 this year, but the figures would show that we've actually dropped approximately 500 in the last year, so there's also going to be there's a severe shortage of sergeants, so there's going to be a lot of guards promoted, maybe 300 in that, and then when you take retirements into account, the problem is that 800 recruits next year may actually just keep us standing still and will not stem the decline. So, you know, it won't see the increases that the public have been promised and that we believe are necessary. And it also takes a lot of time to train people. And as you say, COVID has wreaked havoc on the training regime, so it has delayed. Now, in fairness, there's very active solutions to solve to those problems to keep training online and to keep members being sworn in, but it certainly is having an impact. So we're just kind of marking time, not really making progress towards what people what we envisaged the force was going to be in large relation to increased numbers and a better service and a more visible service for the public.
All right. Just before you go, if I could just ask you about something that we discussed in the last hour, and this is to do with the very, very poor conviction rate in the courts in regards to people who are being prosecuted for carrying mobile phones. And we spoke to Susan Gray, founder of the Road Safety Group. Now, there's just about a 25% conviction rate on average, which is quite shocking, right across the country. In Kildare, it's only 19%. But during the discussion, Susan revealed that in Kildare in 2020, 135 people were brought before the courts for using a mobile phone while driving, and there was not a single conviction. Not one. And we've heard of people turning up in court and saying, well, I didn't get informed and this, that and the other. Is that not extremely frustrating for your members who are not imagining things when they see and say, tell someone, look, you've been driving with a mobile phone, you're facing prosecution?
Well, it certainly is. It is frustrating, and it's indicative that there is some sort of a problem there with the system. And, We don't really have any problem. When we go to the court and give our evidence, that's all our input. So whether someone's convicted or not is outside of the remit of the members that I represent. But certainly we would find it very frustrating and very disheartening. So the system needs to be looked at. And one of the issues there, I mean, that has been a way of focus on as an association too, is the use of, that they don't use registered posts. So sometimes it's very hard to prove that a notice was served. So that was something that we did flag in the past. But I wouldn't be familiar with the intricate details of exactly what's going wrong in the system, but certainly
yeah. It's not that, and I don't want to put you on the spot because of that. It's not so much there's obviously something very wrong in the system whereby 135 people go before the courts in Kildare in 2020 and not a single one is convicted, and people come in with all sorts of excuses. I was wondering, and I don't know, Brendan, if you're aware of this, there was a time when Gardaí issued an on-the-spot fine. As I understand it now, Gardaí just advise a motorist, you're facing prosecution. They go back, it goes into an electronic system, and then some notification is sent out. But obviously, as you have just alluded to there, it's falling between stools. But from the perspective of your members, if I was a Garda, I'd find it extremely frustrating to be, you know, absolutely witnessing people using mobile phones and then going into court and hearing all sorts of excuses advanced that lead to no conviction.
Yes, well, look, as I say, I wouldn't consider myself being an expert in these legal matters, but certainly, as you alluded to there, it was a very simple system. Whenever I stopped an individual, I spoke to them, I looked them in the eye and handed them a piece of paper and was able to go into court and give evidence that that piece of paper was handed. You know, these systems we move towards where people, as you say, put it on a computer system and it's generated automatically. That, if that is the particular element of the evidence that's proving hard to prove, certainly that would be the feedback from our members in Roads Policing. And I know John Joe O'Connell is a regular contributor to your program.
Yes, he is indeed.
John Joe works in Roads Policing, and that is the feedback that we had when this changeover came a few years ago. And that's in relation to not only mobile phones, but seat belts, tax, and that. It's a very simple piece of evidence for a guard to give that they spoke to an individual and it handed them a piece of paper on the N7 on a specific date. And whereas now the state has to prove that an envelope or a piece of paper went from wherever it was generated to another person to a system and that, you know, it was delivered. So if that is one of the difficulties that is stopping prosecutions, we would definitely say that the old system may have had advantages. But again, you have to look at the thing in the round. There's advantages and disadvantages and weaknesses. Different stages in the process.
All right, I think it makes a laugh of the whole situation because it's replicated right around the county or the country with very low conviction rates. So there is a huge anomaly in the system that needs to be addressed. But in Kildare, that's quite alarming that number 135, not a single conviction.
Well, and again, when we come back to this thing where, you know, we're constantly told, and I'm not saying this is the case here particularly, but that the in every Garda district or every division of the country, there used to be guards exclusively on summons serving. So you'll read these reports about how we're releasing Gardaí from non-essential functions, like something like summons serving, and told that it's progress, but yet whenever we see things like this occurring, maybe it's not always progress, and maybe these plans aren't always thought through. As I'm not saying specifically, but, you know, a lot of systems that weren't broken are being fixed, and people are being told that it's leading to better service, but really, whenever the things are drilled into it, it's not always the case.
All right. In terms of this information, by the way, was elicited by Kildare TD Catherine Murphy in a parliamentary question, and we were commenting on it this morning, and we hope to have Catherine on the programme on Monday. She's on leave at the moment. And also we'll have John Joe Connell on to give his perspective from the GRA and as a roads policing Garda. But Susan Gray was very complimentary of the Naas policing unit in terms of the amount of work they do. I can just imagine then how they must feel that every time they walk into court, they see people walk away on all sorts of what might be spurious excuses. And on that particular issue, and indeed on the other issue of the early retirement of Gardaí with this force down at least 500 metres from its peak of a couple of years ago, Vice President of the Garda Representative Association, Brendan O'Connor. Brendan, Happy New Year to you, and thanks for all
happy
of that.
Happy New Year, Sam. Thanks very much.
And good take morning.
Care. Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Thank you for your messages coming in. A listener says, Clem, you're right about Djokovic, but look at the situation. People are discriminated against if they haven't a vaccine. For example, I have a family member who's a member of a gym, and she's been told, and for her mental health, she loves to go to the gym. I'm paraphrasing this email now because we're a bit stuck for time. She's been told she can't enter the gym now because she's not vaccinated, and this listener thinks that's wrong. There's thousands more around like her around the country, and we know how exercise is so important for your mental health, and they go on about it every day of the week. I do, but when, can I just say one thing? Yes, I'm vaccinated. I'm double vaccinated. I'm boosted. I'm in favour of it. You know that. Because it's a public health measure. It protects me, and from my view, it protects you, because I don't want to give you the virus. And it doesn't mean I won't get it, but it protects me to a great degree against getting it. So the key thing for gyms and other premises is they have a duty of care to protect their staff and other people that use their facility. And they can't leave themselves open to the fact that if they don't respond to public health concerns and they ignore them, and that other people can then make claims against them, etc., etc., etc. So while everybody has a right not to get vaccinated, when it does impinge on the potential health of others that you could be passing a virus around, well, then that has to come into play as well. Clem, as it was 2020 when those actual cases for driving with the mobile phone were heard in court due to the pandemic, as most cases were adjourned. But that's not, it's not a case of, yes, I'm sure many of them were adjourned, but not all of them. And it's reflected around the country since 2018, every year. The average conviction rate in Kildare is 19%. 19, that's a fifth of these cases. Now, is there any other aspect of law where people are brought to court on charges where only a fifth of them are convicted? Or in 1 year, nobody is convicted? And I take your point about how many cases might have been adjourned and they might have been due to COVID and everything else. But this is a 3-year span these figures are looking at. So keep your messages coming. Thanks for those. Now, speaking about whether, you know, the authorities or the legal system is dealing with people driving with mobile phones and implementing it or not, it's not just in that area, because the IFA maintains that a lack of enforcement by authorities leaves sheep flocks vulnerable to dog attacks. And of course, we have a significant sheep cohort here in the county, particularly around the Curragh. Sean Dennehy, in a moment, we'll speak to a Curragh sheep farmer, but Sean Dennehy is IFA sheep farm chairman as well. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning, Clem. How are you?
I'm very well. Now, we hear concerns about this every single year, the damage done to dogs by sheep, and anyone who's ever witnessed the particular outcome of that would be absolute horrified and find it revolting as such, the cruelty that's inflicted on these poor defenceless animals. Is it worse this year than other years, Sean, that you're raising it again now?
It tends to get very bad at this time of the year. I don't know why it is, but I suppose it's the fact that the long days are longer and the dog attacks, they happen at any time of the year, but they seem to be worse at this time of the year. And the ewes are heavy in lamb as well. And, you know, farmers have been looking after their sheep. They went off and they bought good rams, and they've been looking after their ewes very well and making sure that all their treatments are done and that they don't get any diseases and making sure that they're well fed and everything. And, you know, for a farmer to come out in the morning and for his flock to be decimated is soul destroying. And it's soul destroying for the whole family. And, it, you know, we depend on this as our income, and somebody's carelessness caused this. It's absolutely soul destroying for us.
And from your perspective, why are you making the point that there's a lack of enforcement by authorities?
The reason we're making this point about the lack of enforcement is last year there was 241 stated dog attacks, but that's only the tip of the iceberg. There's way more than that, and a lot of cases go underreported. But, you know, in all of the whole country, we only had 82 prosecutions and 198 dogs seized. And I've been on before with you, Clem, and we've highlighted this problem. And I would like to thank you for giving us your time to highlight it and to make people aware of the problem. But, you know, we really do need to have more action taken by the local authorities.
I was as concerned when I saw this as I was about the lack of convictions in regards to using mobile phones, which is shocking, I have to say. And in your case, 82 out of 241 convictions seems, again, extremely low, and I'd love to know the reasons for that. And this, by the way, folks listening out there, is not just an issue for sheep farmers. This is an issue for every one of us who has a dog, or who might have a dog, and how we allow that dog to roam or otherwise. Sean, stay with me a moment, because we're joined by Percy Podger, who is a sheep farmer on the Curragh. Good morning, Percy.
Good morning, Ken. Thank you for having me on.
You're very welcome. We've had Percy on the programme previously regarding to sheep invading people's gardens over in the Orchard Gardens, as it's called there, in regards to that. And the sheep showing huge intelligence by even learning to open gates and jump fences and that. But on this very, very serious note, are there not maybe thousands of sheep on the Curragh, Percy?
Oh, there are, yes.
And this is and this is an open access area by and large.
Yes, it is. Ken, if I may just say, of course I concur with what Sean has just said, but just to make it clear, I thank you for your invitation to come on, but I'm here also representing a number of farmers from Atai to West Kildare and, of course, around the Curragh. And I'd like to acknowledge that all of the various workers who walk on the Curragh, because we see them as our friends, they've often let us know what offenders have a difficulty with a sheep. And I'd also like to particularly acknowledge the Kildare Gardaí and Newbridge Gardaí for their very proactive roles, especially with dealing with a separate problem of night marauding by dogs. But there certainly have been attacks of late, both in the Atai area and around the Curragh area, including on Christmas Day, where the sheep have been attacked by dogs. So yes, it's an ongoing problem, and of course we appreciate airtime on it to highlight the travesty of the cursed sheep when they're savaged.
Yeah, I wanted to bring on the idea, of course, it's not only here in the Curragh that sheep are kept, but right around the counties you're pointing out attacks on the sheep. So we have, but in particular with an area like the Curragh, Percy, it's an open access area used widely by the public. And Is there a scenario where people bring dogs and let them loose for exercise?
Well, I would rather put it that there is a scenario where people bring dogs and are irresponsible, sometimes during the day and also at night. But a great many of the people on the Curragh, in fairness to them, which I am wanting to say in fairness to them again, because they really have been our friends, walking the dog responsibly. If the sheep get run by a dog who is a wrong dog, shall we say, or by somebody who has done so irresponsibly, even a dog who is not so, you know, aggressive or whatever else, can disturb the sheep subsequently, because the sheep have an inbuilt terror that they then see the dog and they want to take off, and this affects the sheep very substantially and affects wider than that.
And then you get the chase complex that the dog is, has in its very nature, in its genes, to chase anything that's moving or running comes
that's
into play.
That's the dog's nature.
Yeah, the dog's nature
is to hunt. So it's people's responsibility and our nature, if you want to call it that, to train them not to. And there are things that people can do for their dogs, like they can hunt in their gardens. But they can learn more about enjoying their dog with Cesar Millan, a famous dog whisperer, and they can learn how to control them an awful lot better.
And I suppose on that note, Sean Dennehy, the idea is that people sometimes have a tendency to open their door and let the dog here run out there and get a bit of exercise or whatever else, but people don't always know what their dogs are doing, particularly after the hours of darkness.
Yeah, but it's true of any time during the day. Like, it doesn't take very long for a sheep attack to happen. And, I've had personal experience where in about 7 minutes that there was potentially damage could have been done to my flock, where a sheep will go into shock in a very short space of time once they're attacked by dogs. And if that's as close to lambing, they might not come out of that, because once the sheep will go into shock, they stop eating, and if they stop eating, they start breaking down the fat in their bodies and they get pregnancy toxemia, and that can lead to their death.
And one point before we leave it, Sean, have farmers a right to shoot a dog on sight?
The farmer has a right to shoot a dog if they have no other means of stopping him and that they are doing damage to his flock, worrying or attacking his flock. So that's the farmers have a right to shoot the
dog. What you want is that more people, if ownership of the dog can be proven, that more people be brought to court and that the process of the law be brought to bear on them.
What we want is for people to be responsible in what they're doing. It isn't the dog that caused the problem, it's the people, the dog owners are the problem. It's not the dogs that are the problem, it's the dog owners. And we want people to be more responsible, keep control of their dogs, keep their dogs within their own property, and not just open the door and leave their dog out and sure, he'll be grand, he'll come back in whenever.
And I suppose, Percy, as a final word from you, you'd echo that sentiment of Sean's. Sorry, Percy, are you there now? Yeah.
I'm here, Clem, yes.
Yes.
I would emphasise, on a can-do basis, if you could advocate to people when they let their dog, they don't just let them put them in a run so that they don't manage to run away, because it doesn't even take 7 minutes for a tragedy to happen. It can be a lot faster than the experience from the current would be that.
All right. Leave it there, Percy. Your line is just kind of break up a bit, but keep control of your dogs, folks. Know where they are at all times. And particularly as we move in to the lambing season imminently now, it's all the more important, because the savagery that the dog inflicts on these sheep, the injuries, are just something else to behold. And horrific indeed. My thanks to Sean Dennehy, IFA Sheep Chairman, and Percy Podger, sheep farmer on the Curragh, but representing a number of farmers around the county as well.
Killed Dare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Ask Percy, will farmers compensate the people when their sheep destroy people's gardens and cause all sorts of damage? It works both ways, yes. They're two different topics, and yes, the merits in that, if sheep destroy property, yes, I feel farmers should be liable for it. We've covered that extensively on the programme in the past. But if your dog is destroying a farmer's livelihood, but more importantly, is causing the kind of horrific injuries and death to other animals, well then, it should work both ways. I agree with your last sentiment. It does work both ways. Right, it's a huge weekend. It might be the new year and the first week of the new year. I feel, was there Christmas, I wonder? Because I certainly can't remember it at this stage. It's heading off into the sunset and we're back into action. Delighted to have the games again. And tomorrow is a doubleheader at 1 o'clock in St. Conlon's Park. Glenn Ryan begins his campaign as Kildare manager along with his backroom team when Kildare play Westmeath in the Auburn Cup first round, and that's followed at 5 o'clock tomorrow evening when Naas footballers play the Leinster final against Kilmacud Cropes of Dublin. We'll be joined by Tommy Callaghan, Leinster Leader Sports Editor, in just a moment. But first, let's hear what Glenn Ryan had to say to me when I interviewed him on the occasion of the announcement of his appointment.
I'm not going to be making any sweeping statements with regard to how we'll play. We need to just sit down and look at things first, and from there we'll develop you know, working with the players and working with our the fitness teams and working with our own ideas of how we'd like the game to be played or how we should be played in any particular day. Things will evolve from that.
That sense of commitment that you brought to the jersey yourself at number six, that's where it all starts, is it not, Glenn?
I have no doubt that every fellow who's pulled on a Kildare jersey over the last number of years has done so with the intention of representing that jersey to its fullest. Our plan and our ambition would be that continues, and you know that there might be a little bit more or something different that we can put into it. But any player who, and you know the way things are now with club football, never mind county football, you know, people who go out and represent their clubs as well as their county, there's a huge commitment expected and a huge return expected also. When people commit to, whether it's Round Towers or Clonrinco or Sarsfields or Moorfield, they're given that commitment from the start. It's just maybe a little bit extra required at county level.
Congratulations again. Best wishes to you and the team.
Yeah, well, thanks very much for that, Clem. And I would like to, you know, on behalf of all the lads, thank everybody for their good wishes. As you say, it's been a very positive response, and our aim is to hopefully continue that positivity. And you mentioned the 90s there, Clem. Maybe it's time we left those behind us and start making a new successful era for ourselves.
Indeed, Glenn Ryan, along with his team of Johnny Doyle, Anthony Rainbow, Dermot Airlie and Brian Lacey. What an impressive backup. Tommy, I don't know if I've been this energised about a Kildare season ahead since Mick O'Dwyer arrived. And that's with all full respect to previous managers, of course.
Absolutely, Clem. Good morning. Happy New Year to you.
And you too, Tommy.
Yeah, look, it's all positive, Clem. But I just hope you have to be very patient, you know. It's not, nothing's going to happen overnight. And the times we're in at the minute, the boys have been training for the last, since the middle of December, I think. There's injuries, there's COVID, there's lads playing at the club still. So people are going to have to be patient and don't be starting getting all excited if the win comes to me or if they don't win. You just have to be patient. I think that's the first thing I'd like to say anyway.
Now, Tommy, there's very little we can say because I don't know about you, but, well, I think I do know about you and also Patton and Ashes, and there's been no joy in getting details of a panel just yet, has there?
No, there hasn't, unfortunately. I know there has been... I call it a panel. Other people don't call it panels, but I think, as far as I know, there's around 40 people on a list. We won't call it a panel, we call it a list.
Right.
40 on that, and that includes Nays lads and lads that are still involved with that club, you know. And it's not closed by any means, from my understanding anyway. Some lads have already been in and some lads have already left. And the preparation has been disjointed in the sense, not from the management point of view, but from COVID and a couple of one challenge match, you know, had to be moved or even cancelled. And but we won't really know until we see what the team is.
All right, and of course, a very interesting season. I've already been contacted by one national journalist, knowing fact. Find out what's the reaction in Kildare to the return of Jack O'Connor at the end of January with his Kerry side and what kind of a welcome Jack O'Connor would get. My view of that is that Kildare supporters would always be respectful of former managers, and I'm sure Jack will get a Cade Míle Fáilte for his time here in the county as well.
You're getting very warm.
Now, Tommy, no booing from the press box, okay? You know that's not allowed in the press box. And no wearing the jersey or booing in the press box.
No.
Now, in terms of that, we'll have full commentary in that game tomorrow, of course, with Ger McNally and Peter McConnon. And we'll have post-match interviews, we hope, with Seamus Dillon and that in regards to St. Conan's Park. Our coverage tomorrow from about 5 to 1 is with Hand and Concrete Products of Robertstown. And they're very welcome back indeed aboard for yet another year, as they've been so supportive of us in recent years. And Tommy has an extensive preview of all the sporting action this weekend, including our next game. But just before I go to our next game, by the way, to point out that Kildare's next outing in the O'Byrne Cup is against Carlo. It was to be next Wednesday night at the Carlo Training Academy. It's now been switched to Dr. Cullen Park on Thursday night. And we'll have full commentary of that game as well. But Tommy, With all due respect to everyone else, tomorrow, a huge day, the first of two weekends in a row for Naas, because the hurlers go into action next weekend in the final, as do the Kilcullen footballers, of course, but also the footballers tomorrow evening at 5 o'clock take on the might of Kilmacud Crokes. Let's hear from Owen Doyle. Is he player, joint player, manager, whatever, of the team on the win against Shelmaliers?
It's not going to be a pretty football that it was maybe in the summer. It's a completely different ball game, but absolutely delighted just to come out the right side of it.
Any worries with the hurlers involved as well, that the mileage is going to catch up on you?
Well, look, they are doing that. Mileage is no two ways about it. There's probably clubs that have more dual players than us. We only have the two lads, but they're two good lads and they're very clever and intelligent, and they'll manage their own workload. It won't be up to me or I would imagine the hurler manager to tell them what to do. They'll look after their own bodies and do what they need to be 100%. But I think it's great for them, and it's great for the club to have that dual status going. I think, anyway, I wouldn't be discouraging it in any way, shape or form.
You're heading to Croke Park now.
Yeah. I remember two boys were asking about that after the county final, and at that point it was probably a distant memory now, but I wasn't thinking too much about it. But it's absolutely great. Like, it's great for the club, I think. But going there and performing, or going there and playing a match is one thing, but going there and winning is a different kettle of fish altogether. So that'll be the objective.
You scored goals at the right times today here, but you always have goals in your team, as you showed right throughout the Clare Championship and the run up here to today.
Particularly in the second half, we got a couple of at the right time that took the sting out of their play. We thought in the first half we were very sloppy up front in particular. We lay in a couple of soft goal, and I felt it would have been soft enough directly off a turnover. So, you know, we have to sharpen up on those things. You won't get away with those things as the competition goes on. No matter if you're in a county competition or a Leinster one, every time you go further on, the competition gets greater. So we'll have to improve, but the goals did come at the right time.
4-11 now is a very healthy scoreline.
I think in the third quarter, the sting probably came out of the game a bit when those goals went in, and then maybe the 4-1, I don't know, against the run or play, like, but maybe we mightn't have got that goal in the first half, because everything would have been a bit tighter and a bit more intense, but kind of opened up a small bit there.
Injury-wise, Jack Cleary was missing today. Where is he?
Yeah, Jack's just a hamstring, kind of an ongoing hamstring one at him, so he wasn't available. Probably won't be the next day either.
And Alex?
Alex the same, you know, hamstring again. And
what about Dermot Hanifin?
Dermot Hanifin's finger kind of dislocated and fractured in the county final, so we would hope to have his services back again, but the other two lads would be doubtful.
Earlier, the two lads he was referring to being Ger McNally earlier, and the last couple of questions there by our Leinster Leader sports editor Tommy Callaghan. Tommy, the challenge facing Naas tomorrow, I see the bookies, and you're a better betting man than I am in terms of analysing the odds anyway. The bookies are putting Kilmacud Crokes as red hot favourites, odds on favourites.
Yeah, I wouldn't be too upset about that, Cam. You don't forget, bookies don't look at the bookies look at their market, and their market is bigger in Dublin than it is in Kildare. As I wrote in the Leinster Leader this week, every year before the Leinster Club Championship starts, there's a Dublin club installed as favourites. Any Dublin club, without naming a Dublin club, it's just that's the way it is. And naturally enough, Kilmacud are favourites going into this simply because they're from Dublin. It's not that this is not a star-studded Kilmacud Crofts team. They're a decent team, but they're not unbeatable by any stretch. I saw the Dublin County Final. You know, it wasn't brilliant. I saw the semi-final. It was shocking. You know, I mean, there's nothing to worry about in that regards. The one thing they want to get out of their heads is this Dublin thing. They have to get rid of that Dublin thing. And just look upon Kilmacud. They're 15 against 15. Go over that white line and give it everything.
No one man makes a team, whether it's 39 years old Eamon Callaghan. How incredible is it that Eamon Callaghan, at 39 years of age, he still looks as fit and as active, and is as fit and as active as he was 10, 15 years ago. I mean, a huge Kildare career, and going into that tomorrow. And Naas, of course, are backboned by a number of Kildare players as well. We've mentioned one of them there in Eamon Callaghan. We had Owen Doyle as well. What about the value of Paul Mannion, the now former Dublin player to Kilmacud Crokes, Tommy? There's doubts about him due to an injury he picked up in the semi-final against Port Arlington.
Yeah, there is doubts about it, Clem, but you have to, you have to take these things sometimes with a grain of salt. As far as I'm aware, Paul Mannion didn't go off in that game. He was got a knock early and a knock late, which means that he's doubtful for this one, so we have to wait and see. He's a huge player for them, have no doubt about that, but this thing that he's I mean, they're saying that during the week Paul Mannion is doubtful, and there's a few others doubtful through COVID, but you're every player, every club in the country has people doubtful because of COVID at the minute. You never know when you wake up in the morning what's going to confront you.
Yeah.
But, There's more than one man team, you know.
Of course, yeah. But Tommy, I want to go back to Nace. Would you have had concerns about that Nace performance against Shelmaliers? Would you be of a view that Nace were lucky to actually win that game?
They were a bit lucky, but then again, you don't forget, Clem, they were lucky against Tullamore. Or fortunate, maybe, rather than lucky. Against Shelmaliers, they probably deserved to win, to beat Shelmaliers more than they did to beat Tullamore. Against Shelmaliers, I thought their set-up was wrong. I thought that they sat back, they conceded kick-outs, they were defending rather than attacking. I mean, to my mind, Nace are at their best when they have the ball, when they're running at the opposition, when the lads coming off the shoulder, get the ball into Derek Kieran, get the ball into Paul McDermott, whoever's there, Eamon Callaghan, you know, Dermot Hannafin, if he's playing, I'd imagine he will start, but that's up to, we'll have to wait and see that. There's a lot of good scoring forwards in there, but they can't. You go back to last day, Luke Griffin started off brilliantly against Shelmaliers, but for after the first 10 minutes, no ball went into him. There's no point. I mean, no, the best forward in the world won't score if they don't get the ball into him. I mean, Darren Kevin has to come back out, which he does, and he does it brilliantly. He moves back out to the half forward line, or maybe even to the midfield, but he's a great man to carry a ball. And it was a brilliant goal he got, an absolute brilliant goal. And then Dermot Hannafin. I mean, he showed tremendous confidence to go for that goal, which was a brilliant goal.
Oh, it was a cracker of a goal. Jeez. I mean, he nearly ripped the net out of it. But very difficult to call tomorrow. There's no point in speculating other than to wish Nace the absolute best of luck, and we'll all be right behind him. We have full commentary on that game. Ger McNally and Philly Wolfe will be in Croke Park for us in association with Auxilia Management Consultants. They're based in the Millennium Park in Nace and have supported us and Nace right throughout the campaign. And you can read, as Tommy pointed out there, he's been commenting it, putting the boot into Dublin there in the Leinster Leader this week in regards to that. A detailed analysis of the game, and of course full reports and analysis in Tuesday's edition as well. We're looking forward to a big day, Tommy. It'll be hopping out of Condit's Park, I imagine, and off to Croker.
Absolutely, Clem. No helicopters. The best thing we've done for a long time is the match to move back to 1 o'clock to Kildare match, to give anybody that's interested a chance to get up to Croker.
Yeah, it made a bit of sense. And speculation that KFM was acquiring a helicopter is totally unfounded. Because
I heard them only use your own helicopter, Clem.
Tommy was already ringing, looking for a lift. Anyway, listen, have a great weekend, Tommy, and thanks once again. We look forward to you joining us throughout the new year. Happy to you and all the team at the Leader and your readers as well. Thanks indeed.
Thanks a million, Clem.